fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Der Gebärmutterhals als Sexualorgan und Straße zum Glück Richtung Superorgasmus? Es klingt ein bisschen wu-wu, ist aber wissenschaftlich belegbar. Die heutige Episode mit Olivia Bryant ist auf Englisch, aber ich verlinke euch einige Infos und Quellen auf Deutsch in den Shownotes. Welcome, Olivia. Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Olivia, do you have a safe word for today?
How about cat?
Cat.
How about pussy?
Even better. Olivia, this is not the first time we're speaking. Last time I checked, it was 8 years ago. I mean, can you believe it?
I can't believe it. And I also can't believe that early on in the journey, it actually picked up some interest because literally I just started. It was about maybe 9 years ago in January. We've been going about 8.5 years or 9.5 years. I can't remember. I can't remember. 2016. So, it's amazing because I was such a little baby in this world of the cervix. You know, I'd been doing a lot of work for years around sexuality and sensuality, but, you know, the cervix, it was brand new territory. So it was quite amazing to even at that point in the journey to have someone notice, actually, because I was so innocent in my explorations at that point. I had never had any kind of relationship to my cervix other than a painful one, you know, medical relationship. And so I was coming from a place of curiosity at that point. And now 8-9 years on, it's same topic. So you can just imagine what has happened over 9 years.
That's incredible. I remember when I interviewed you for the first time, you told me you're still also a student of the cervix, which I think is such a nice way to put it. Like you're not this guru, teaching people, but you're we're all still learning in this. And I think that makes you even more relatable as a teacher.
Yeah, I still feel like I'm a student of the cervix. I think I'll always be a student of the cervix because it just never stops opening up for me. The world just never stops showing me new things and learning new things. And, you know, I suppose if there was an area that really started to really get a connection between the deeper I go in connection to my cervix and everything I have to face on this journey of cervical awakening, the more I'm faced with myself. Mm-hmm. And so it's so interesting that I sort of subconsciously called the work self-cervix without even knowing that these two pieces, self and cervix, were completely interlinked. It's like, how did I know? Because it wasn't really until I'd, you know, just started realizing how challenging it can be, you know, to face the things that we store in our cervix, and that, you know, really one of the key messages that I started with and that I'm still going with is that this place in the body is sort of symbolic for our historical journey as women, that our bodies have been done to, have been in the property of other people. We've relied on others for our pleasure. You know, please, somebody help me understand how to work my body better because I don't know how to orgasm. So I'm going to go to a tantric body worker or somebody, you know, just anybody help, you know. And it's like, actually, you know, it's all about your relationship to yourself and this, and finding your voice and claiming your authority of your own body, finding the confidence to raise your standards and have boundaries. And all of this takes self-worth and really a rewriting of what is possible now, a new narrative for the cervix and for our bodies, sovereign beings. So, it's so deep. I had no idea. It's literally deep and emotionally deep and spiritually deep.
Okay, I think we need to get the people in the boat that have never heard of the cervix as a sex organ. I did a little like survey on my Instagram and some people were like, oh yes, I've done that. And others were like, cervix what? So let's start at the basics. Could you also give us like what happens in the body and the science behind it?
Yeah.
And then maybe also like your journey with it. I think that's like five questions in one, but...
Yeah, it's going to be a long answer. So here I go. So your cervix forms the neck of your uterus. I think it's so lovely. What's the German word auf Deutsch? Gebärmutterhals?
Gebärmutterhals. So Gebärmutter Hals. Means like birthing mother.
Yeah, isn't it beautiful?
Like it's beautiful.
Mother mouth or something. Mm-hmm. It forms the neck of your uterus and it protrudes. It comes into your vagina, so it feels really different in terms of the quality of its tissue compared to the rest of your vagina, which sort of will feel soft. This tissue, it's harder tissue, and so if you reach inside and up, you'll feel this thing that it's like the sort of the tip of your nose. If you were to touch the tip of your nose and feel that cartilage tissue, it's a special kind of stronger, harder, and it's got a little dimple in the middle of it. So it feels like a donut, and it is connected to your, it's part of your uterus. So because your uterus moves, your uterus is a suspended organ. There's these little ligaments that hold your cervix tight and open. And so what we often find is that as the uterus moves, so does the placement of the cervix. So some people, we actually imagine, according to medical textbooks, it's like directly upwards. But most people I've met, their cervixes are actually usually on the left side. So mm-hmm. you might have to go for a little bit of a, discovery to see if you can find it. And when you are having sex and you get really turned on, there are these ligaments that lift the uterus up. So your cervix moves out of the way for a penetration to occur. And so the big thing that many of us might neglect to do is make sure that we're sufficiently aroused and turned on before penetration. And so I'm sure a lot of your listeners have felt that feeling when your cervix gets whacked, hit during penetration. It's kind of like a sharp ow. Like this is tight ligaments and your cervix, like it feels really painful. So it's worth it. And this is a piece around empowerment, right? It's like, oh, my cervix is so precious. There's no way I'm going to let you be inside of me until I'm ready now, because I realize that all of these years of going along with painful sex has meant that now my cervix is really numb or in pain. So most people that I have spoken to have a very disconnected relationship to their cervix. It feels medicalized. Perhaps they've given birth, so it's really associated with their reproductive journey. Some have had trauma during birth. Many of us have felt, the procedures, the things that are done to the cervix causes a sort of, you go into the doctors and you've got to lie down, and it's sort of a fast process where you are disassociating from it and we just want to hurry up and get it done. A lot of people will find that they have a painful cervix, or it will feel nauseous when they touch, or it will feel numb, which is what I found when I began working with my cervix, was that it was completely numb. And at the time when I began, even though I'd been working on my sexual healing for years, I was still fairly... I would say not that orgasmic. I was very reliant on a strong vibrator to have any kind of orgasm at all. And it was a very necessary part of my journey because at least it allowed me to feel pleasure. And from a sex positive point of view, I would take the road of like whatever makes you, whatever helps you feel pleasure, you do that. But things started to change as I started to work with my cervix because I realized that I had become so conditioned to a particular kind of fast, strong stimulation on my external body, which has a particular nerve that is different to the nerves innervating the cervix. So that when I would go inside and try and feel subtler things, I wouldn't feel much at all. There was just not a lot of connection between my cervix and my brain. And the craziest thing about that is your cervix has the most nerve endings, the most neural connections to your brain than any other part of your sexual anatomy. And in fact, one scientist I've spoken to, he reckons that the cervix has more sets of paired nerves going to it than any other place in your body, mm-hmm. which would make sense because it is part of our survival mechanism. It is how we be part of our reproduction, you know, so that would make sense. So when you go to a doctor's and they say, oh, your cervix is meant to be numb, that's not true. It's just that doctors are still not being taught in medical school about the innervation of the cervix. They are still taught that it's not supposed to feel, but actually it has nerve endings all over it, all over the front, and these neural connections. And anyone who's had anything done to their cervix and felt pain knows that that's the truth. So when I began, my cervix was numb and I was working with like over 1,000 women in this one initial training. And we all established, you know, some people were having really amazing, empowering experiences because they'd never touched their cervix before. Other people were realizing that they had actually some pleasure when they found the right kind of touch. And I would say the majority were coming up against a lot of difficult stuff and emotional memory and grief and rage and all the things that we store in our creative center. And so I realized early on, oh, wow, we're onto something here. This is really interesting. And that started me on my journey of what I started to coin as cervical awakening. And it's kind of created its own modality now, it's got its own thing. And so over a period of 9 years, I've managed to establish and understand the phases of awakening it to sensation and awakening it to pleasure and healing. And one is just, first of all, being able to connect to it. And that can be confronting in itself. Many women haven't touched themselves inside. That's not how they're used to self-pleasuring. And so if you have listeners, you know, feeling like terror at the thought of it or repulsion, that's actually not uncommon.
Yeah.
It is part of an ancient wound that we are learning how to heal and really claiming back our body as ours.
I've heard this so many times, women coming to me telling me, oh, but it feels icky to touch myself inside there, you know? Yeah. And I'm always like, but it's your body. Like,
yeah. I mean, and there's like a real wounded little part of us, you know? It's like a young part of us that's got a lot of shame around it, you know? And so this is why it's self-cervix, because the healing has to also occur in your heart and your mind, sort of a new determination that you breathe deep and slowly over time you develop the courage and the conviction that this is my body and I am now going to claim it back. And when those feelings of repulsion come up, I'm going to breathe, I'm going to pause, and I'm going to be with that place inside that is disgusted with a part of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm going to do the healing work to let it be safe for all parts of me. So that can take time. You know, who knew? Like, you know, this is ultimately coming back into wholeness. And a part of us that has been, you know, disconnected from our lexicon of sexual, you know, tools that we can use inside of our body, it's the cervix. So this this reconnection to this exiled place that is in the dark, it's symbolic of reconnection to the exiled parts of us that we keep in the dark. So it's like, you know, I could say, in fact, I actually couldn't. I've read articles where it's like, oh, five steps to cervical orgasm. And I'm like, what the heck? and honestly, like, you might be lucky, but like, I think that that's really misleading. I was on that train going, oh, it's only five steps. I'm just going to do this, and do this. Get in doggy style. Like, actually, that makes me, I'm really fascinated by that common teaching around how to have a cervical orgasm. And it's all it's like a lot of strong penetration. And it's like completely the opposite to what I teach, which is coming into deep, deep connection, real slow presence, really awakening your senses to the most subtlest things. You know, really what I came to realize is that, like, all of the efforting, all of the trying, all of the stuff that we do in life, which is seen in the bedroom to, like, you know, be better, to do, you know, the ambition, the drive, it's exhausting just thinking about it, right? It's not a part of this journey. You can't bring your ambition with you, because none of the masks, none of this trying, none of this forcing, none of this pushing, it doesn't work here. This is about getting as natural and relaxed and dropping your guard and, like, oh, it's a big exhale. I don't have to work so hard. Maybe I never had to work so hard to be myself, to be orgasmic, you know? And so where the journey for me is at is, it's, there's a big healing component that occurs. And then after the healing, after this release, then you start opening to pleasure, and then you start opening the gates to very, very interesting energetic experiences. And now, 9 years on from when we first talked, I've had the most incredible cervical orgasms on my own and with lovers. And it is a whole new paradigm of making love. It is. I remember the first time it happened with somebody, I was like, I was like crying afterwards. I was like, who even are you? Who am I? Am I an alien? Are you an alien? What are we supposed to do with this information? Like, it was so different to anything I'd explored ever. It felt like this divine lightning opening up inside of my body as we just became light together. Like, what the hell? Like, that's mind-blowing to me, you know? Like, it's so deeply beautiful, and it really shifted the definition of making love to me. It's, like, profound.
Yeah, I agree. It was profound for me as well. You know, I think I had my first cervical orgasm not knowing what it is. And then after I spoke to you, I think you confirmed, like, yeah, that was it. Must have been it. Wow. And then I started, you know, working with my body, like de-armoring, which you will have to explain to our listeners. But I can tell that for me, and this is why I wanted to talk to you again also, so more people can know about this, because I feel like still not enough people know about this, mm-hmm. is that it does change you also, like, mentally. I feel like it helped me grow up, you know, because exactly as you say, it's like, okay, if I figure out that this is a very sensitive organ, like, who am I letting into my body, and how fast will she tell me if something's wrong, you know, because she is, once awakened, she is quite talkative in a way, right?
Oh, yeah. It really, I actually say, funny, interesting you should say that. I say when I started working on my cervix, that was my initiation into womanhood. Mm-hmm. Like, that was my initiation, and that sense of, like, growing up, it just keeps on expanding as you drop more into your embodiment, like as you are in your humanity, and in the other direction, you have an understanding of who you are spiritually. So you can imagine the wholeness that begins to form and the opportunity for self-esteem to grow inside of you, and then how you hold your boundaries and how you raise your standards. It was really interesting. Like I felt so full inside of myself that I was alone for a lot of this journey. And I think it was a real blessing because I didn't have to deal with anybody else's body. So it allowed me to really deeply feel. So if any of your listeners are on a solo journey right now, like enjoy it. It's an amazing opportunity for sexual healing so that when you come together with your lover, you're so grounded in who you are. It's like, oh, the other thing that was really, really interesting for me was if you listen to the audio recordings that I made before my cervical orgasms and then after my cervical orgasms, it's like totally different. Mm-hmm. It's like, in fact, I'm about to release a program with audios from before my cervical orgasm. And I keep going, I should remake them. But I'm actually going to leave it because I think it's so interesting to just realize that as this part of my body got activated, my creativity, which makes sense, flourished. It became so beautiful. Like I started really feeling like I was hooking up to something, you know, and it was like I literally started to feel like I was a channel for something. Like it's really, really incredible. Makes sense. Creativity, you know, whether it's birthing a human baby or birthing, you know, this body of work.
Agreed. I also went off the pill after I started working with my cervix because I felt like the pill can make it numb as well. And I really wanted to know what's going on, and then feeling also like my menstrual cycle, like how the cervix also changes in the different stages of it. I find that really interesting, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a whole other kind of aspect of the work that I never really went into so deeply because my focus was mainly on, I just had one true north, and that was how do I experience myself as divine in my human form? And then how do I do that with another? And, you know, I was never really on a fertility journey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I also when I started this, I'd already entered perimenopause. So, you know, it wasn't something that I was deeply focused on, but it's a whole other area. So just for people who are listening, when you are bleeding, your cervix drops down lower. And when you are ovulating, your cervix rises up. And when your menopausal, which I now understand, is your cervix, it's in the right, it's raised up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you asked me before about, you know, de-armoring and touching your cervix. So, you know, a lot of people will feel even more repulsion touching during a bleed. But if your cervix is really high in your body, that is one time where it can be much easier to get to your cervix. And so doing conscious touch practices, you know, at some point towards the end of your bleed or whenever you feel comfortable is a really great idea.
Mm. I want to talk to you about two things. So first, I still need to talk to you about menopause because I just read the new book by Miranda July on All Fours. Have you heard of it?
Oh, I love Miranda July.
Oh, then you're going to love her new book because I feel like this is like the great American perimenopause novel. So she describes this in detail. And what she describes, or her character, is like your libido is like this cliff. And then when you enter menopause, you fall off that cliff. And I've discussed this with friends, like, is this going to happen to us? But talking to you, it feels like not necessarily, right?
Yeah, but I have to, I work on it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's something that I'm committed to not losing.
Okay.
I have my stakes are really high, right? I've got a lot to lose if I just don't feel like having sex ever.
Yeah.
I could really go, I mean, you know, naturally my libido is not high. Like, people are really surprised when I say that, that naturally my libido is not high. Yeah, I used to make myself wrong for it. You know, I used to be like, oh, I should be much more sexual than I am. And then eventually I really accept the seasons of my body, and I really honor that we all have you know, a different rhythm. And I would say that I definitely felt some kind of change when I entered into my menopausal, you know, late perimenopause. Definitely felt that. But I sort of took charge of it and was determined to stay connected to this aspect of my being, even though it would be much easier not to. I am committed to having a sexually available pussy for the rest of my life.
Preach.
And, you know, and that takes that, there is a discipline to that. I just, you know, and one thing that has helped is my de-armoring practice, mm-hmm. actually.
Tell us all about it.
Because de-armoring is a way of releasing the tissue of whatever tension is holding it stuck, numb, in pain, and stopping it from experiencing pleasure and stopping it from experiencing orgasmic contractions. So it was actually the very first thing I started doing, and I did as a baseline, and I did this for the majority of the journey, for at least the first 4 years. I was really just focused on healing and focused on releasing tension, because the interesting thing about tension is you never completely clear it out of your body, because life happens. You know, I notice in traffic, I'm sitting in traffic and my pelvic floor is lifting, and, you know, or I'm having a difficult conversation or my belly's squeezed in, you know, and so then I'm like, oh, okay, I've had a really stressful few weeks. I'm going to go and do some tension release, some de-armoring internal. And I often will go in and be like, oh, there's a lot, I'm holding a lot. And so de-armoring is not just something you do in a 6-week program and you're done. De-armoring is like any kind of stretching, like yoga practice. It's something that you take on as, you know, I say that de-armoring is more than just about releasing. It's about connecting to. It's about developing a relationship to this tissue and really being aware of what's going on and how your behaviors are impacting this place in your body. It's, again, self-cervix. So it's like a behavioral change might be needed. I need to like lean back a little and stop pushing so much. Whatever it is, it's going to show up in your vagina. Mm-hmm. So the thing I love about, so de-armoring really, it's like trigger pointing inside of you. But for the way I practice is very mindful. It's very, I let the tissue lead me. I let the tissue tell me where it wants my finger to go, how deep I'm breathing. I lean my finger in. I'm not pushing and prodding mindlessly. I'm really, really just, I'm chill with it. You know, our vaginas have been bullied a lot. You know, there's been enough going on down there. It's like, it just wants to know it's safe.
Yeah.
Right. And so I'm just like, just whatever. I'm going to go slow. If I feel my body saying no, I'll leave. And often I'll feel just a, it's very hard to describe whether the yes and the no internally. It feels just like a woodenness, like a wooden quality comes about me. And it's like, suddenly it's like a turn off, you know? And I'm like, oh, okay. It's a no, you know? Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about de-armoring is, and the way I like, and the reason why I said it's a really a good practice when you're not feeling particularly sexual is you don't have to be turned on to de-armor. You do have to have a yes and an inner permission. And the thing is, so I created and made these wands with a very, very skinny end that's about the end size of a finger, and I just rest mm-hmm. the tip of the tip at the entrance of my vagina, and I'll just breathe and hold and then slowly move the wand around and finding places of tension, and then usually I'm invited in and I'm not all turned on. I just have a yes from my body. And you know, just doing that starts a little bit of lubrication, or you can use coconut oil as well. And so I found in this kind of, when I've been feeling flat, that just having that practice keeps me in connection. And oftentimes it's just that I will feel more inspired to continue with potentially pleasure practice, you know? So I'd really invite your audience to, if they feel comfortable, just feel, what's it like at the very entrance? Is there tension there? Do they feel any pain there? And just go with the flow. Just develop this connection. Like, I'm listening. What do you have to say to me? You know what I mean?
So the best way is to start with your own finger, right? And then eventually, yeah, because then you can really feel the tension.
Yeah, I think so. Like, you can, it creates a kinesthetic awareness. It actually strengthens the relationship because you're between these places in your body. However, like I said before, not everybody is going to feel safe and comfortable doing that. If there is a real, like, if it's just too much, then you can use something like the wand that I make to help you out and to help you get used to it. And then, you know, if you are, the other thing, so that you can use a wand, or, you know, just start with your, you know, put your finger at the entrance without any agenda to penetrate and just breathe and say to yourself, I am safe, I am loved, I am safe, I am loved, you know, and just, you know, whatever you need to help you shift the current monologue that has you avoid.
Yeah. And then eventually move on to your cervix.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, see what happens. See, like, yeah, the cervix, you don't need to rush there. There's plenty to address before you get to the cervix. You know, there's plenty of wounding inside of us, plenty of tension that we're holding on the way up.
I mean, there can be trauma, like in like the medical sense, but there can also just be, you know, the body can store so much there, right?
Yeah, it's interesting conversation. Like, there's metaphysical conversation, mm-hmm. but there's also, you know, real evidence that we, everywhere in our body, we're storing our emotional, there's emotional residue, you know, the body is clenching in response to our thoughts and our emotions. And, you know, we're creating, it's like, I feel like these little thought knots in my body, like in my shoulder, oh, yeah. like where I was stressing out, I've got like a little thought bundle, like, you know, there I've got to like, oh, work it out. So it's same vaginally. And then there's a whole metaphysical conversation around just, you know, what we might store energetically there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't really speak to that. I think every woman has to intuitively feel what she may be storing there. Like, you know, there's a lot of grief. You know, people have lost their babies, like, you know, lost their lovers, you know, and, you know, had difficult sexual experiences that they might feel that somehow energetically they're still holding the residue of it or the echo, like a memory there. And yeah, for me, that was the case.
Like, when someone asked me how I would describe it, like the cervical orgasm, I'd say like exorcism, but in a good way, you know?
I love that. An exorcism in a good way. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I reckon, like, what I've also know is that it's a different experience for everyone. Mm-hmm. So language is very misleading. You know, how many times have you listened to someone describe a sensation experience and you've been like, I want to have that. I want to try and have that thing that they're talking about. And then you're so away from your own body and your own experience, mm-hmm. looking for something that feels a bit like what they said, mm-hmm. that we lose ourselves in the equation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, what I really got was, you know, I actually stopped, unless it was super, it was really like requested. I don't describe often what it really feels like because A, I can't put it into language, and B, it's just actually not that useful. It's a lovely story, but everybody's experience seems to be different. Some people see colors. Some people have like, you know, spiritual downloads and like need to journal like afterwards. Some people, they're just, it's full of tears and they're just like crying with absolute beauty with this heart expanded open wide, wide, wide. Like there's all these different manifestations of these incredible love-based states that feel very spiritual.
Yeah, I feel like if you say it's this interstellar cosmic experience and then someone is having it and it's like, oh, it's great, but it's not interstellar cosmic yet,
yeah.
You know?
yeah, exactly. Even like, what is cosmic? And then I've got this thing in my head that, okay, it's got to look like, I had it in a, you know, I'd read about it in books or something and I had this image in my mind about what it was supposed to feel like. And I think, yeah, I mean, it was a kind of a fantasy. Mm-hmm. It feels just as amazing as what I imagined, but just different.
yeah. Is there any exercise? Like I had one woman like sent me a bunch of questions about her experiences and she was like, is there any way I can make this more special? Or is that already like chasing this idea? Because she's like, this is very intense. I have like 10 minutes where I'm totally out of it. She's also a bit scared that she can like, that it can be dangerous because it's so intense for her. So it's also what I need to ask you on behalf of her.
Yeah. Well, there's the intensity piece is on us learning to expand our capacity to receive a lot of sensation, mm-hmm. whether it be pain or whether it's pleasure or whether it's money or whether it's love. It's like we are expanding our nervous system's capacity to hold a lot of energy, a lot of sensation. So yeah, it will be intense until you have trained yourself to relax around the experience. Yeah. So that would be one piece is like, work on relaxing as much as you can around the experience. Don't forget your breath. Although I must say that when I'm in this heightened state of cervical orgasm, my breathing stops. It's like I'm gone. But I also have a practice where I consciously keep trying to stay with my breathing, but it almost holds me in my body. It just sort of holds me there. It's different than what I ever imagined. Everybody was like, oh, you've got to breathe all the time. But actually, that's not the case. It's not true for me. Mm-hmm. But it is something that you can practice. You just got to remember, you've got to keep releasing your tension, even as you're holding more energy. And the other thing is open your heart.
Yeah. Last time we talked, I asked you if you need to have like, if you can only have cervical orgasms with like someone you're really in love with. And you said, nah, but you should trust the person. I think this is something that I really took away from it, that it's okay to need to trust someone that you're having sex with. Because, you know, when you're like in your 20s or 30s and there's all this like Tinder sex around and you're just like, okay, I need to be in this state of wanting the sex now and make yourself want it, right? And I feel like that's the opposite of what I'm doing now.
Yeah, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like for me, safety and trust are the key things. And also I'm very aware that my cervix is a sacred gift to anybody who enters my body and touches it. So, and I hope other women are feeling that too. Like, you know, our cervixes are sacred gifts. Whoever touches them, it's like an activation potentially, you know? And so, I am in this place in my life where the quality of the person really matters to me. I want to feel grounded, safe, like I have a voice, like I feel some level of trust for them, yes. Because I also know that once I start opening my body like this, this is my personal experience, is that my heart opens, you know, like it's really deep for me. Mm-hmm. It's not like this for everybody, but it is for me. And so I am particular. And yes, that has meant that I have gone for periods without having sex, but that's okay for me because I have great sex by myself. and I have and do magnetize incredible lovers because of that standard.
I think this is a really interesting discourse right now. Like the New York Times called like being boy sober the hottest mental health craze, and people are having less sex. And for the first time in the media, I feel like there's a discourse going on like this might be good, you know, because 10 years ago you'd read these alarmist headlines like people are having less and less sex every day and everyone's like shocked. And now it's like, hey, it might be okay to have less sex and have the sex worth wanting, you know?
Yes, wonderful. Yeah, absolutely. Like there have been times when I've questioned it, because of course I've been through times of like, is there anybody out there who's going to meet me? And yes, it is 100% possible to get exactly the kind of human that you want to have inside of your body. And also, if you're already in a relationship, it's also possible to shift the dynamic between you and create even more connection, love, divinity between you.
Mm-hmm.
It just takes potentially some relearning, some conversation, some communication, and a willingness on both sides to, I think, you know, as someone who partners with men, I have got a lot of compassion for the men who are journeying alongside their female partners who are going through a cervical awakening journey, because they change. And the men are like, I don't even know how to pleasure you anymore. And it's freaky, you know? And so I've actually finally creating a men's program coming up in September somehow to like give men some support as they are invited to sort of go on a growth journey with us.
Is there any general advice you would give to partners? Like also you say like they can experience the cervical orgasm as well when they connect with their partner?
There's a lot. I would say ask your partner what's her relationship like to her cervix. Has she ever explored it? Would she be open to exploring it without any kind of agenda, like just to see what it's like to connect? You know, a lot of the time the wounding for men is I have to perform something. I have to create a result. I have to be pleasing. I have to, you know, I've got to be a great lover. And where I have shifted the paradigm there is that, you know, especially in an exploration, my partner is an assistant to my process. So their job is to listen and follow instructions. And that's good because it takes the pressure off them having to know what to do. And it empowers me to have a voice in the space. And then ultimately, you know, eventually it doesn't have to be like that. But I think at first it's really great. And it's great for the dynamic to take the pressure off. And it's great for the woman's self-knowing, like, I know how to touch my cervix because I've done it myself, or I don't know, I'd love some support. I need you to listen, just be guided and I will guide you, you know? Mm-hmm. And the other thing to know, I suppose, is that it can be very, very vulnerable for a woman to open like that. And so it'd be really nice to ask, what do you need to feel safe? Is there anything you need to hear from me as we go into this process, or even afterwards? Or during,
yeah.
You know, like, you know, and just saying, you know, I've got you, this is, you know, you're so beautiful. Thank you for this gift. Like we want to feel honored, you know, and seen and appreciated, because honestly it's, and then after the process, the female partner really needs to acknowledge him for being courageous enough and willing to go on that and really appreciate him for that, because it's vulnerable for him too.
Yeah, especially for a man who doesn't have a cervix. I mean, I feel like it could be maybe easier for female partners to relate, but
yeah absolutely.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
how would you say your work is political? Is it
I mean, it's not anymore.
Okay.
I used to feel like it's such pleasure activism because we are claiming back this place in our bodies that has been disenfranchised as a result of patriarchal culture and, like, you know, conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't need to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to be on the side of the fight. I don't want to be on the side of the, you know, it just is what it is. Some people will find it very political. It's about reclaiming our, it's for me, it's also become about the environment and the earth, you know, and how we're treating our bodies is a complete, and how disconnected we are from each other is just showing by how we connect to the earth and how disconnected we are to the earth and each other. Like, there are layers and layers. You could look at it through an amazing political lens, mm-hmm. but I'm about creativity, generating beauty, love. I'm out of the fight. So like that's what I'm here to offer, is I'm bringing in a place where rather than having to be against something, I want to be for the evolution of humanity.
It sounds big.
It was big.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I don't know if I'm you can't consciously, you know, I can have a big vision and I can show up for it, but how it lands is, it's really not up to me. It's, yeah, I can't do everything. You know, I started off very, very angry about what had happened to my body. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not angry anymore, because I see what a gift I've been given through all of the pain that I've been through. I'm just like, well, thank you very much for all that shit, because now, look at me.
Yeah, and you've given this gift to a lot of other people, right?
Yeah, as many as I can reach, but, you know, I'm still relatively small and unknown, and hopefully over time, before I die.
You have any idea why that is? Like, why do people not know about the cervix still?
I mean, I can take some responsibility for that. I don't push myself out there in front of podcasts. I don't, like, you know, I lean back. I let people come to mm-hmm. me if they're interested. I think it's very threatening, some aspects of this work. The spiritual aspect is, you know, painted in a particular sort of fluffy way, where actually it's very important. And I think in terms of our evolution, about where we're going with our consciousness, I think, like we've talked about, it's threatening in terms of what it can bring up inside a person if, you know, they don't have any tools to hold themselves. Like, it's just unconsciously a little bit scary. Mm-hmm. And also with everything that's happened to the cervix, it makes sense to me. But I guess I just want to say, like, there's so much reward from having, from pushing through your barriers and limitations. Like, you know, like there's so much power, personal power to be gained from, like, I want us, like the clitoris, it's had its like recognition. It took a long time.
Yeah.
Look how long it took. They were in the late 70s and 80s, the feminist pioneers were like doing their own work to liberate the clitoris and, you know, bringing in vibrators and having vibration circles and doing all this stuff to show, yeah, I can be sexually empowered by myself because I've got a clitoris and it's got this. And now, and then I think we're some late stage, 2011 or somewhere, can't remember the, it was like, oh, they did the first MRI and they saw the full scale of the clitoris, and so late in the picture, mm-hmm. after they started in 19, like early 80s to 20, you know, so it's like, how long is it going to take for the cervix to catch on? Mm-hmm. Probably less time because of social media and our connectivity in the world. But you can see, like, most of the world is still coming to terms with the clitoris, let alone the maturity to start diving into the cervix.
Yeah.
Like, as a species, humanity, we're not mature at all yet. Nowhere near the where we need to be.
I agree, unfortunately. So yeah. What's the best place to start? Like, do you have like a intro program or PDF?
I do. You can get a free ebook. Mm-hmm. You can go to selfcervix.com. You can download a free ebook. There's a more detailed ebook. It's like $7 or something. Mm-hmm. And then you could get a wand, and there's a de-armoring ritual on the site that people can purchase. You know, a lot of the programs, they're longer and they're deeper, And so there's not a lot, you know, just there on offer, because these spaces, I prefer them to be held spaces, but there are things that you can start. So the ebooks are a great place, and the de-armoring rituals, great place to start. And if you just follow me at Self-Cervix, I'm constantly posting free content and constantly giving information to sort of feed into the picture.
I think you will help a lot of people in Germany now.
Actually, yeah, Germany, it's like my third largest following.
That's good.
I love the Germans.
I think we did that. You
guys are ahead of yourselves.
8 years ago, yeah. I think we...
You're ahead. Yeah. You're ahead of yourselves. You know, I love my German audience. You're so evolved. It's great.
Yeah, I think they're really getting into it. And also when you tell them like, okay, this releases like a DMT-like trip in your brain also, I think people can get into that.
Yep. Yeah, people are like, whoa. God, I'd love to prove that. That's what I want to prove. I'd love to prove that it's like DMT, but we just can't put in a needle into a woman's body the minute she's in having, or I just don't know that it would, I don't know. Just, well, anybody, there's no funding for it. So
Yeah. But yeah, Germans love you. And I love you too. And I hope we get to speak again in 8 years and then see where we're.
Yes, and see what's happened. I'll be full crone. I'll be like eldership. I don't know. It's so cool.
Yeah. So thank you so much for talking to us today. And
thank you.
I'm excited.
Thanks for having me
to
again.
See where you're headed next on your journey.
Oh, it's so wonderful to reconnect. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Olivia.